The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, and engineer, Kenneth Norton. Ken, good morning.
Good morning.
What a beautiful morning here in Sonoma County. I have a special guest for this show. Joining me in the studio is a woman by the name of River King. I'm going to change her name to River Queen, but that's River King, who is works with Tiny Houses and for Humanity. She's one of their lead organizers. We'll be talking about the homeless challenge our community is having and the idea and importance of tiny houses to help all those people with this issue. One of the questions we will be exploring is how did we get to this place where our veterans are sleeping on sidewalks, where the elderly and disabled are living in tent encampments, where entire families are sleeping in their cars at night. I mean, that, I'm going to play a very interesting song, The House I Live In, to just show that this is not American values that we have these homeless sleeping in their cars, especially the children, for heaven's sakes. We have to start looking at this. I think exploring this question will give us some insight into what is happening. And then the second half of the program, I'm going to do something a little bit different this Monday morning. You know, I never take space for myself, and I decided I'm going to do that. So I'm going to have a discussion. I'm going to put some ideas out there and what I think about power and play some very, very interesting songs and do a little analysis of them. Well, on September 17th, 1787, that was yesterday, was September 17th, today's September 18th, the delegates to the Constitutional Convention met for the first time to sign the document that we have created, the Constitution of the United States. I mean, that is pretty pretty exciting to me, you know, when you start thinking about it. Well, anyway, think about, you know, 1787, you know, the vision these people had. They were separating themselves from a king. They were separating themselves from overtaxation. And they met, the delegates met to come together and to write a constitution that would give them certain inalienable rights. And, you know, there were problems back then. We understand that. You know, many of those people were landowners. They had slaves. There was all kinds of things going on that really were not totally in line with what they were talking about. But the good news is in our constitution, there is room for change. And we are constantly changing. You know, in 2020, it's going to be 100 years that the women got the vote. Originally, women could not vote. I mean, that was very, very interesting. Originally, African American people were only considered half people, and that was also changed. So, you know, we have room for changes, and it doesn't mean that we have to stop changing, because change is good as we evolve, as we move forward. And we have to celebrate that idea that on September 17, 1787, these men met and decided to write the Constitution of the United States. Very, very exciting when you start thinking about it. Well, a reminder, you know, it's hard to believe the Independent Office of Law Enforcement Review and Outreach called IOLERO, I-O-L-E-R-O, is going to release their annual report. And it's very, 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 I can't emphasize it enough, that we show up and listen, the community shows up and listens to that annual report. One of the things, one of the buzzes lately, or a little bit of gossip that I'm hearing here and there, is that some of our supervisors might be wanting to get rid of that particular office, and it's very important as citizens that we show up at the Board of Supervisors and let them know that this is a very, very important office. Sonoma County Independent Office of Law Enforcement Review and Outreach, they're going to release their annual report summarizing the activities and findings of the office for the period of its opening on April 11, 2016 until July 31st, 2017. Hard to believe a year years gone by. The 61-page report provides information about the activities of Alero, as well as its findings on audits of sheriff's investigations and among other topics. So you need to be there. This is their first annual report. It will provide the public a comprehensive look at how the sheriff's office is doing through the lenses of audits of investigations, use of force, trends, and responsiveness to the public. And that was a quote from its director, Jerry Tweet. And overall, the trend is a positive one, but additional work remains to improve the picture. This period laid good foundation for collaboration between Iolero and the Sheriff's Department and the public. And Jerry Tweet is looking forward to building on the program as he moves forward. So it's very, very important to show up at this very important meeting and express what you're thinking. You know, some of your feelings, some of the improvements. I think we've made some improvements in our county. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that, but we continue to improve what we're trying to do. And especially in today's world, we need transparency. We need public input more than ever. Well, that's a lot to think about, but that's what Women's Spaces is all about. We got to put on our thinking hats and start thinking about it and getting more involved. You know, it's very, very interesting. On October 18th, which, of course, is a month away, two very important things are going to be discussed. We're having the National Organization for Women is going to be having a gathering at the Redwood Credit Agency in their community room. And we're going to be talking about planning an event in 2018, which is going to be a celebration of the first time 40 years ago in Sonoma County that women first marched for women's rights. And through the help of Molly Murphy McGregor and a group of women, we marched through Santa Rosa and we demanded that we have more rights and that we wanted a Women's History Month. And just think, that happened 40 years ago, right here in Sonoma County, Santa Rosa, California. So a special shout out to my dear friend, Molly Murphy McGregor, and the group that she worked with that brought the National Women's History Project to being. And then the second thing we're going to be discussing on October 18th is the fact that we're going to have a big celebration here in Sonoma County of 2020, celebrating 100 years since we got the vote. And you know, so interesting. I never realized this, but when I was born in 1940, women only had the vote for 20 years. You know, it's real interesting, and I'm really sorry. The one regret I have is that I didn't talk to my mother about what did it feel like when she went to the polls and voted for the first time. You know, my mother would have been one of those first voters. So it's an interesting thought. And what's another thing that is really perplexing to me is oftentimes people don't vote. You know, we work hard. You know, there are nations across the world, the globe, that are fighting for their lives to try to get elections. And we have elections and people don't vote. So it's very important. 2018 is coming up, particularly here in the local elections all across, you know, Northern California. It's just amazing. In fact, you folks who are out there listening, you know, we cover 18 counties here at KBBF. So if there's any interesting candidates, interesting women that are running, please, please email me at Elaine at Women's Spaces, that's womensspaces.com, and let me know. I'm glad to see if I can set up an interview and talk, because, you know, here we are. It's, here we are in Santa Rosa, California, but yet we're reaching out to 18 counties here in Northern California. Plus, we're streaming, which means we go across the world. Everybody can listen to this show today. I mean, to me, that is amazing. When I was born, I didn't even have television, and here I am on the radio, and I'm going across the globe. I mean, it is fascinating to me. So before we take a musical break, I want to just, in light of what I just said about KBBF and its streaming, I want to encourage folks to become a member. You know, I've been listening to another radio station the last week that's doing a fundraiser, and I'm just amazed at how much money comes into that station. Well, here we are, a local station, and we need you out there to become at the very least to become a member. So you can go to kbbf.org. You can find a membership application and put on the application, Elaine sent you, you know, give me a little credit for it. But also you can find out how we're streaming, so you can tell your friends in other counties outside, even outside of California, that they can listen at 11 o'clock on Monday morning to Women's Spaces via KBBF.org. That to me is pretty exciting. Well, anyway, we're going to take a musical break, and after the break, I'm going to be talking with River King, and we're going to be talking about these tiny houses, and we're going to be talking about the homeless situation here in Sonoma County. And it's part of my era. You know, I was born in 1940, which was just about around when World War II broke out. And I remember when I was about 4 or 5 years old listening to Frank Sinatra. My Uncle Al bought a 78. I'll never forget a 78 record. Put it on the record. It was called The House I Live In, and it was sung by Frank Sinatra. But you know what I do? I try to find all these popular songs, and I try to find women singing it. And I definitely found a really good arrangement by a woman by the name of Maxine Linehan. But I want to give you a little history about this song. This is a very important song. It came out during World War II. You know, we were very resistant about going to the war, and all of a sudden when Pearl Harbor hit and all the different things happened and we all of a sudden found ourselves in a war, it became a very patriotic duty, so to speak. So let me give you a little history of the war. I wish, you know, when you think about it, you think World War II. World War I is supposed to end all wars, and then we went into World War II, and where are we now? We're warring all over the place. I mean, something has got to stop somewhere. Anyway, here's the history, a little bit of the history of The House I Live In. The House I Live In became a patriotic anthem in America during World War II. The lyrics describe the wonderful things about the country with images of the era, like the grocer, the butcher, and the churchyard. The house is a metaphor for the country. The song was written in 1943 with lyrics by Abel Merlepool and music by Earl Robinson. Merlepool, who wrote under the pen name Lewis Allen, had a very liberal point of view and mixed feelings about America. He loved the constitutional rights and freedoms that America was based on, but he hated, listen to this, so this is 1943, he hated the way people of other races, religion, and political views were often treated. His lyrics do not reflect the way he thought. America was but what it had the potential to be. With the country under attack, he wanted to express why it was worth fighting for. But for me, when I listen to this song, this expresses, number one, we did go to World War II to try to fight fascism, Nazis, and also the idea of holding on to our values. And one of our values is to be able to have a place to live, a home to call our home, our own, a home to go to every night. So let's listen to a wonderful, wonderful arrangement of The House I Live In, sung by Maxine Linehan. And when we come back, we'll be talking with River Queen about the tiny houses that is a kind of a vision here for the homeless in Sonoma County.
What is America to me? A name, a map, a flag I see, a certain word, democracy. What is America to me? The house I live in, a plot of earth, a street, the grocer and the butcher, and the people that I meet, the children in the playground, the faces that I see, all races and religions, that's America to me. The place I work in, the worker by my side, the little town or city where my people lived and died. The howdy and the handshake, the air of being free, and the right to speak my mind out. That's America to me. The things I see about me, the big things and the small, the little corner newsstand, the house a mile tall, the wedding in the churchyard, the laughter and the tears, the dream that's been a growing for 150 years. The town I live in, the street, the house, the room, the pavement of the city, or a garden all in bloom, the church, the school, the clubhouse, the million lights I see, but especially the people. That's America to me.
Oh my God, I start crying every time I listen to that song. I think of my grandmother coming over on a ship to be an American citizen, running away from the pogroms and all the violence that was in Russia at the time of her youth, to come to this beautiful country. And it says, you know, certain things about democracy. You know, we are a democratic country, and democratic countries need to treat their people equally. I mean, that's the whole idea of democracy. And then one another line that really strikes me in this song is the right to speak our mind out. You know, when I see these guys with all dressed in black with guns and everything, when people are protesting, I think, wait a minute, we have the First Amendment. How does that protect our right to speak? It intimidates us. It tries to silence us. A very powerful song, The House I Live In, and it was sung by a beautiful woman by the name of Maxine Linehan. And we need to think about it, folks. We need to think about it, who we are as a country, as an American. Anyway, for you just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine Holt. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest, River Queen, a Sonoma County homeless advocate. I made a mistake. It's River King. Yes. You know, it's a women's show, and I just had to slip that in, River. Anyway, welcome, my friend. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. What'd you think of that song?
That was beautiful. Very appropriate.
I know. I mean, it just touches my heart when I think of the people that came here to this country for mm-hmm. freedom, the freedom to speak out, to be themselves. Then, of course, World War II, which was supposed to be, you know, we're supposed to end and bring freedom to the world. I mean, I don't even want to go into it. Anyway, welcome, River. Welcome to Women's Spaces. And I'd like to tell my listeners a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Well, it is, you know, I want to start out by a statement that River gave me that really hit me very, very hardly. And that created the idea of bringing that song in. The absurdity of trying to provide warmth, water, and food. Warmth, water, and food for my 2-year-old son within the cramped space of our Volvo while surviving Santa Rosa's safe parking lot program was a rude awakening for me. Very, very interesting. I mean, I cannot imagine River being homeless with a 2-year-old child. Mm-hmm. You know, and this propelled her into action. And ever since, she's been working relentlessly as a Sonoma County homeless advocate with a gentleman by the name of Jay Schaefer, who's a world-renowned tiny house designer. Together, they are on the cusp of raising a village, the house I live in, raising a village of tiny houses for those without a place to call home here in Sonoma County. As the success of this model is recognized, many villages can be raised, providing permanent homes for our local displaced residents, single people, couple, families, students, veterans. She asked that you join her in raising the first village of tiny houses for humanity. And also, I want to ask you a question. I understand you are a musician, trained musician. What are you trained in, my friend?
I'm a classically trained pianist.
Oh,
and
my.
I earned my Bachelor of Arts in Music from University of Illinois, Chicago.
How did you ever get involved? I mean, I understand. How did all this happen for you? Give us a little history.
I started teaching about 7 students when I was 17 years old. And by the time I hit 30, you know, I had a piano studio and plenty of students and a waiting list and was living very comfortably. But I just felt like I couldn't continue through my 30s to do the same job that I had been doing as a teenager. So as if I was, you know, doing some lemonade stand still well into my 30s. And, you know, I had other interests, and so I chose to move to California in my early 30s to study naturopathic medicine and became a bit of an activist in the cannabis community. And, one thing led to another. As far as physical challenges and starting starting a family as a single mom. And, homelessness can happen to anybody.
Well, how did it happen to you? I mean, it sounded like you were on the way to doing many things and you had your child. How did that happen?
Shortly after my son was born, I was diagnosed with PTSD. And I noticed that I was not performing very well at work. It was a struggle every day to get there even. And that diagnosis hit me kind of hard. Just even the label had as much of an impact as the trauma that I was trying to overcome. And it was just harder to maintain what we consider gainful employment here in the Bay Area and also housing. And so I bounced around from one inadequate job and one inadequate housing situation for maybe the first year and a half or so of my son's life until I ended up in Sonoma County as a work trader on an animal sanctuary. And it was a really, really toxic, frightening work environment in a lot of ways. And sure enough, when the drama came literally to my doorstep, there was no place for me to go and be safe. And I always assumed when people, you know, fell upon hard times such as homelessness, that's the reason why shelters existed. So it never even occurred to me that shelters could be full all over the Bay Area, and that that was the reason why so many people were sleeping all the way on the streets and so many families in their cars. So when I, right at the beginning of my homelessness in 2015, had to contact homeless services, and they mentioned a safe parking program. It was really, really overwhelming to imagine, sleeping in my car with a baby and trying to provide for him, just even the basics of life. And this is where all the families ended up before they actually made it into one of the shelters, Catholic Charities primarily. Super feeling sorry for myself, waking up the next morning, and then I realized the parking lot was full and that my son wasn't the only child there. It was full of cars, and each car was full of small families and sometimes even large families showing up in 2 vehicles. And
oh my goodness, I had no idea.
Yes. And I just couldn't believe this was America, because homelessness to most people, if you're comfortable, it's something you don't really see. It's like we're sort of trained to look the other way, or we see it, but we just know it's somebody else's problem and that somebody must be, right? Some government agency must be taking care of it and on top of it. And I couldn't look the other way after it happened to me.
You know, it's amazing. I was talking to a friend. We had some friends visit us yesterday, and a friend of mine who also has a radio program. And one of the things that he was saying is that he's been analyzing our culture lately. Excuse me. And one of the things he pointed out is that everything is a profit. I mean, all our needs, a home, you know, apartments or a house. I mean, everybody's got to make a profit to rent, food, mm-hmm. water, you know, all medical, all our basic needs become like a commodity when they're actually part of our survival.
Right.
I mean, and also to think of you having to have that experience with this precious child. What is your son's name?
His name is Asa.
Asa. Imagine having Asa, a little boy in the car. You know, they come into the world expecting... You know, I mean, when you, especially when I keep going back to that song, that home is an American value, and it feels like we're moving away from, you know, from understanding that, you know. Well, how did you all of a sudden change? Well, what's the secret? I mean, here it sounds like you were depressed. It sounded like you were looking around and seeing, oh my goodness, where am I going to go? How am I going to do this? And here now you're involved in trying to build these villages.
Right.
What changed for you, my love?
It was a very quick kind of harsh awakening. I remember making a bed, you know, with a foam mattress in the back seat of my Volvo. Now, I didn't have a hatchback, so I was literally folding the back seats down and unrolling a foam mattress in through the trunk and, you know, through the folded down back seats. And I was putting my son to bed early, just like always, which was before the sun would go down. And since we were just in a little tiny car, there was no place for me to go but to just lie there. For 12 hours, right? If you would go to bed at 7 p.m. and wake up the next morning at 7. And that left me with nothing but my sleeping baby right by my side and my laptop in my lap, literally lying down. And I did what I've always done if I ever went through a hard time and started journaling to help me not internalize this kind of oppression, this kind of community social ill, if you will. And showed up at the living room one day, maybe my second day being all the way homeless. And some of the organizers there at the living room invited me to the Peace and Justice Center, where they were, I think Homeless Action was organizing Camp Michaela. And I just sort of got sucked in to the activist community here. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me in that situation, was to find all the people raging against the machine that is homelessness in our county.
Well, you say two important things. Number one, I mean, most people, a lot of people would be defeated, but you did something very important. You started to journal. You know, and I just want to emphasize, I used to teach a journal workshop, so I just want to emphasize that a little bit, because journaling has a way of getting us outside of ourselves, and we can start looking at what's going on rather than keeping. It's almost like a friend.
Yes.
And then the second thing that you said that's very interesting is that you started to get active. You know, you started going to places that maybe you could meet other people that were experiencing, and then you got involved in Camp Michaela. We did an interview on the camp, and also with the Peace and Justice Center, some of the stuff that they're doing. So talk about, so you went to the Peace and Justice Center meeting, and then what happened? How would that evolve for you?
Well, I just considered those weekly meetings with Homeless Action to be kind of a form of therapy, because at least I could see 15 to 20 people showing up every week to try to work on this.
You weren't alone.
Crisis, and I didn't feel alone. I felt like there were people that could see me, because it's one of the most shocking realizations when you wake up in such dire situation, is that you feel really invisible. Other people can see that you're not okay, and so the only, you know, the first response is often to look the other way. So right away I felt invisible, and showing up to these activist meetings was a way of keeping my sanity and reclaiming just the last little shreds of my humanity for myself and my son. And you know, I was in the parking lot for about 2 months, and then I made it into a room at Catholic Charities. And right after I got in, I met Jay Schaefer, the tiny house designer. And I said, "You're the tiny house guy. What are you doing about the fact that there's thousands of people sleeping on the street every single night?" And it turned out he needed help with his company. And just slowly, you know, over time, I started working on him to become involved in a real solution oriented community project, to kind of like Habitat for Humanity builds tiny homes and gift them or offer them as a real affordable housing choice.
So talk about these tiny homes. I mean, when you say a tiny home, what does it mean? I looked at them, and I couldn't see the inside. Is there a kitchen? Is it just a bed? Talk about what are they like?
Yeah, first of all, Jay Schaefer's designs are just beautiful. They're adorable. They're something that you would be proud to go home to. And many of the homes that he's designed are very small, but some of them are quite large, even up to 400 square feet. And these homes are on wheels. That's the typical imagery that you think of when you think of a tiny home these days. It's built on a trailer, but built very much like a normal home with a fully functioning kitchen and bathroom, and maybe a little tiny, Jay calls it a great room, which is hilarious to have a great room in a tiny house. But a little tiny living room, sitting area. And then the bedrooms are typically in the loft. So the tiniest homes will have just one loft above. A sleeping loft, but some of the larger ones will, maybe be on trailers the size of 24 or 28 feet, and there'll be a loft at opposite ends, so it's essentially multiple bedrooms.
Well, where do they build them? I mean, what would the cat for in order to have, tiny home village, because that's your goal, is to do a village, mm-hmm. Where could they be built here in Sonoma County?
Well, for our campaign, we're going to build a tiny home on Redwood Forest Friends Meeting property off of Gurnville Road, and then the high schools in the area, lots of the woodshop teachers, several of the woodshop teachers are interested in building one right on their, letting their students build one on right on the school property.
So already, it sounds like already you're involving the community. I mean, it sounds like it's a community effort that's happening, and here the high schools. I mean,
yes.
I can't help but be excited about the skills that you're going to help these kids develop,
yes,
in building a home.
Yes, in fact, one of the high schools in Cotati built one last year, and I'm not sure what they're planning on doing with it, but it was just super easy. So there was already model set up in place to let a classroom over a semester build a tiny house. And it was my intention this whole time to have them built by volunteers in the community. And I was thinking of, Sonoma State's JUMP program and Habitat for Humanity Builders, and certainly they will help, but it's also really wonderful, I think, to get the high school students involved in this kind of social consciousness, because of course they know they'll be building something that will go to a person in need.
Well, also, it gives them a sense of what democracy is all about and what it is to take care of people that we have. It's really interesting, the big debate is whether we need government or not. And they came out with some article, I think I read in the Press Democrat, how during crisis, like the floods that are happening, all these different things, you need government. You need government to step in, to use their resources. And I see the same thing with houses. You need housing. You need government to step in. I mean, when you think of folks, think about this. We are spending trillions, capital T, trillions, TRILLONS. That's how you spell trillions, not millions, of dollars on wars and safety. We're supposed to be protecting ourselves from terrorists. And the biggest terror that's going on in our country right now is the fact that we're having all these weather conditions, these mm-hmm. flooding, but also the fact that we have so many homeless people.
Yes.
And that why something like this is not just put on the, put on the radar and just starts to happen. Mm-hmm. So what do you need to make this happen? I mean, how is the county? I mean, are there funds? Are there grants? What is going on with this idea?
Our organization's working with both the city and the county, and we're raising funds within the local community. So everybody, these various groups are involved in either looking for land for the village or helping to raise funds. And there's also businesses that are donating materials or offering a discount for our campaign. And Mary Edwards Winery just donated a ton of lumber, probably all the lumber needs for just our little tiny village project.
So what does that show you when people start coming forward?
That people really care. Everybody, in fact, that they do see homelessness, right? And it's on their radar, and I think it's just been overwhelming everyone. We don't know what to do. We don't know who's responsible. We don't know. And to just give people an action plan and invite them, we've had a beautiful response constantly on our social media accounts. There's people saying, when can I show up and help build houses? And it's kind of medicinal for everyone, not just the homeless people that will be receiving these houses, but for the members of the community to show up and serve and gift in this way. It's also very healing.
And do something.
Right.
You know, we often feel, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to talk in the next segment about how I perceive power. But there's another thing in power. You know, we feel, you know, we have this, the way our structure is set up, you know, like we have rock and roll stars and we have all these big people, you know, they're the rich ones, they're one. And somehow everybody feels that they are powerless,
mm-hmm.
you know, that there's nothing they can do.
Right.
But that's not true. That's not true. People can't organize, can't come together. We'll talk a little bit about, we're coming to the almost the end of our segment here. This is such a fascinating topic. And I really want to, you know, do a shout out for you that you've come from this place, and what makes you even more powerful is that you know what people are going through.
Yes.
So it gives you more energy to kind of help move forward.
Mm-hmm.
But talk a little bit about the role you mentioned at the beginning, the role of the Peace and Justice Center. Now, how are they helping? You know, most people, you know, we all know we have a Peace and Justice Center.
Yes.
But what are some of the things that they're doing for you? Give us an idea.
Well, three of Tiny Houses for Humanity's organizers are board members with the Peace and Justice Center. So there's some overlapping involvement. And the Peace and Justice Center will be providing fiscal sponsorship for this project until we turn ourselves into a formal nonprofit. And I want Tiny Houses for Humanity, the nonprofit, to act very much like a homeless services, where we can direct people to services and also get them on a list to get into housing, whether that be tiny or large, normal housing.
You know, I was just thinking too, I have this vision of this tiny house village, and I also have the vision of people coming together and working together to keep that village sustainable and to keep it up.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end of our segment here. Is there any websites, or how can they get a hold of you? How can people get involved? How can they participate?
Well, maybe the most important thing to do is go to our campaign page, where we're using crowdsource funding. At the website URL is hatchfund.org/project/tiny_houses_for_humanity. I know that's a complicated URL.
Okay. We will put it on our website.
Great.
We will put it on Women's Space.
Yeah, and if you Google Hatch Fund and Tiny Houses for Humanity, it will pop right up. And also, we have several social media accounts, Facebook primarily, and you can search for Tiny Houses for Humanity on Facebook and get more details about the campaign there.
And what about you? Do you have an email if people want to email you?
Sure. tinyhousesforhumanity@gmail.com, all spelled out.
And we'll have all that on Women's Spaces, www.womenspaces.com, so people can check it out. We'll have all that information out there for you. Well, River, my friend, we're at the end of our segment. Is there any last word you'd like to say to our listening audience? Any type of encouragement or anything you feel is important to end?
Just if you've ever felt overwhelmed by this problem and wondered what you can do here, Tiny Houses for Humanity is a real actionable step. I always want to remind people that housing is not just a basic human right, but it's also health care. And nobody can be healthy, productive members of society if they're living all the way in the streets, in their cars, or bouncing around from shelter to shelter. So I want to encourage everyone to be part of the solution.
Well, River King, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces and for doing such an excellent job for our community, trying to bring a solution to this homeless problem. And, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of, folks. You know, and we judge each other so harshly. You know, there's an old saying, there but poor fortune go you or I. You never know what tomorrow brings. You know, some of the wealthiest, most powerful people that I have known that somehow have ended up homeless, and understand that what a horrible situation it can be. And it can happen overnight. So thank you so much for all that you do. Wow. You know, another woman engaged in trying to help our culture, our world, be a better place to live. And, you know, I just cannot imagine in my wildest dreams what it's like to have a 2-year-old baby and not have your own home. I mean, that to me, as far as I'm concerned, every woman out there listening to say, that's not the way we do it here. Anyway, we're going to take a musical break. And, you know, I found a great song by Holly Near. It's called We Are Singing for Our Lives. And I want to dedicate this to River and her project. And the reason I want to do that, because I know she's a musician, and I know that she brings forward a lot of different ideas around music. And this is a really great song because we are singing. We're speaking out for our lives. You know, this is no joke, folks. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening in this culture that we need to look at and we need to participate. So let's listen to Holly Near, Singing for Our Lives. And when we come back, I'm going to do a little overview on power and play a few other songs. Anyway, here we go. We Are Singing for Our Lives by Holly Near. Singing for our lives. Yes, we are. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I am your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And this next part of the segments that I'm going to be talking about is I'm going to take this space now for myself. And I just thought I would remind people what the mission statement is for Women's Spaces. Women's Spaces is dedicated to ordinary women doing extraordinary things. And what I think is very, very important in the mission is that trying to bring women to the forefront that are doing things, to give examples for other women, to give other women courage and insight into what it takes to be an activist and why it is so important. And another thing about Women's Spaces that's part of their mission is to remind our leaders, before they make and import those important decisions, no matter what it is, they ask one very, very significant question, and that is it good for the children? If it is not good for the children, then we should not do it. Because the children are our future. If we don't give them a future, you know, what is there? I mean, why do we have children if not for a future? So we need to take care of them. They have a right to live. They have a right to life. They come into the world innocent, and we as adults have to be a little bit more responsible. You know, it's really interesting doing this show. You know, I'm enjoying almost my sixth anniversary here, 6 years on the air, and I want to thank KBBF for allowing me to have the show every week. I mean, it takes a village to bring a radio station together, let me tell you. That's why I try to encourage people to give donations, to become members. I mean, this is your local. We cover 18 counties here in Northern California, plus we're streaming, plus we have a website, www.womenspaces.com, that all the shows are archived that you can listen to. But you have to become a member. You have to support this station. But I didn't mean to put that in. Now I want to go into a little talk about power. And this is something I wrote several years ago, and I found this quote, which I think is very, very interesting. There are but two powers in the world, the sword and the mind. In the long run, the sword is always beaten by the mind. You know, well, think about that. The sword is always beaten by the mind. Why? Because the sword can't logic. It can only kill. But the mind can solve problems. It can think of different ways to act, to interact. You know, and then when you look at war, you know, that we elect leaders and they have the power to do war. But what is power? What have we given them? What does it mean? So I took the word power, P-O-W-E-R, and I took each letter. The greatest power of all is not in ruling others or commanding great wealth, but in commanding the brain's thinking process. That is where all power begins. The wonderful thing is that this power is available to each of us, if only we try. But what is power? You know, how can we look at it? Oftentimes we think of power over. You know, everybody's against the government. When government is really supposed to be the power that makes sure that we have equality, that things are equal, that people have housing, that people have food, that people have transportation, that the culture is moving and living and becoming a dynamic life rather than so much chaos. You know, and I think the chaos is because we're not looking at power and utilizing it the way we should. In fact, it's really funny. I went in front of the Board of Supervisors here in Sonoma County, and I actually gave them this information. So let's look at the first letter of power. P. Power is purpose. Ideas, dreams, goals, any product of the mind's eyes harnessed to a purpose will produce a storehouse of power. Purpose. Power is purpose. You know, it gives you that, you know, I have a purpose in life. If I get up in the morning, I have a purpose. That's one aspect of power. Oh, in power. Power is open-mindedness. To have an open mind. It is having a mind open to new ideas. It is thinking unfettered by preconceived notions. And that's so important. Power is open-mindedness. How are we being open-minded when we squash any kind of protest that happens? How are we being open-minded when people go to the Board of Supervisors or the city councils and they express ideas and they're just shot down with the police coming in, throwing them out, or whatever they do? We have to have an open mind. Power has an open mind. It listens and it evaluates and it moves forward on what it hears. The next letter in power is W. Power is wisdom. It means strength tempered by good judgment combined with learning and knowledge. You know, oftentimes when you think about learning and knowledge, you know, power is wisdom. How do we become wise if we stay stuck in the past and keep doing things the same way over and over and having the same results? A good example of that is war. We keep warring over and over and over, and we say we're going to war because we're going to bring peace. And what do we bring? More and more chaos, more and more unhappiness, more and more struggle for people. Where's the wisdom in power if we keep doing the same things over and over again? Power, the next letter is E. Power is energy. It's the engine of work, the force of human expression, the capacity for action. And the R, the last letter, the most important of it all. Power is responsibility. When you are given power, when you're an elected official, people vote because they trust you. They trust that you're going to make good decisions for all of us. They trust that you're going to be responsible. The greater the power, the greater the responsibility. Power without responsibility leads to corruption and evil. Just look at our governments today. Power without responsibility leads to corruption and some pretty evil deeds. Power united to responsibility is the source of good works and the increased well-being of all. So put it all together. Power is purpose. Power is open-mindedness. Power is wisdom. It's energy, and it's responsibility. Power is the ability, the vigor, the strength to influence others and to control one's own destiny. Now, that's a lot to think about. That's a lot to think about. And again, power is wisdom. You know, you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting different results. You have to scratch your head and you have to say, wait a minute, there's something. Something needs to happen here. Something needs to change. Well, that's a lot to think about, you know. But I like thinking. I like writing. I'm also going to put this up on the website on www.womenspaces. You can go into the poetry section and you can see it. You can, read it. And now I'd like to take another musical break, and I'd like to play a song. This song is very interesting to me. It's called No More War, and it's sung by a woman by the name of Maxine Lingla. And it's a real interesting lyric. And listen to it, because we are tired. I'm tired of war. I was born in 1940. You know, the powers that be have brought us into war. One moment after another. I was watching a film on Cambodia. Forgot all about that when we went into Cambodia, and I thought to myself, my God, I thought once we got out of Vietnam that was supposed to be the end. But we still continue. So I'd like to play this song, No More War, sung by Maxine Lingla. And when we come back, I will have a few more commentaries, and then before you know it, the show's gonna be over. No more war. War is not the answer. Love is. Well, you're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm going to end the show with a poem that I wrote that I thought was be kind of interesting to explore and think about it. Why? What does this all mean? A child sat by a lake one day asking, what does all this mean? Who am I? Where am I going? How do I fit into the scheme? I sat down beside him and looked in his eyes and saw the reflections of so many whys. I've too questioned my style. There's so much to say, but in all my searching and knowing, I can't show you the way. I can only try to explain what I see. Maybe you can show me how it should be. You see, life has many a game. The hardest to play is the one for fame. When we look for fame, we look for power. In this quest, you might say, man has wasted many a life, many an hour. Are we all so ant-like and insecure that for fame and power so much we endure? The game of war, it's not hard to understand. It's just fighting and killing man to man. What is hard to understand are the men who are willing. They fight in the name of pride and nation. Pride and nation, my God, I see no reason for this frustration. The amazing yet saddest part is all wars are fought in the name of peace. So you see, my dear child, I too ask why. That's quite a lot to think about with this show. I want to make a special thank you again to River King from Sonoma County. She's a Sonoma County homeless advocate who is working on tiny homes and bringing tiny housing to Sonoma County. Remember, our children are the future, and we must never lose sight about that. This is Elaine B. Holtz, and you've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time. You.